Sit back, relax, and raise a glass, for spirits coming from the past. Sip on salt while your skin crawls with your pre-haunting wolf having a ball. Your favorite ghouls, gather the others, no hesitating. The moment's approaching, it's now time to sing. Haunts and hearts, haunts and hearts, crack open the can and fill to the top. Haunts and hearts, haunts and hearts, this is your podcast and it's called Haunts and Hearts.
No matter where in the world you're joining us from, welcome back to Our Realm. This is the Haunts and Hops podcast. We cover all things paranormal while sipping on the best craft beer from all over the country. Thanks to our sponsor, Tavor. Follow us on all social media at Haunts and Hops. Johnny LaQuasto here with you at Jay Quasto on the socials. But let's get to the stars of the show. She is a veteran paranormal investigator. She'll be telling us plenty of good stories on this very episode. Cannot wait. She's a former team member of Ghost Hunters and a wealth of knowledge. And I guarantee she has some hops in her hand or something delicious. Find her at Ashley Trobe on the socials. She is the brilliant, the magnificent, the hoodie-wearing Ashley Trobe. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, saying that I'm going to give some entertaining stories is debatable, super debatable. Well, but I brought a cool beer, and it's called the Flockness Monster. Oh, that was really diplomatic.
I mean, it kind of, if we do it backwards, it looks like you're like magical, you know, like you called the beer to you.
I like that. Yeah. And I do, instead I put it into my beautiful, that you can't see, Haunts and Hops glass.
I want to hear all about the beer in a second, but let me bring in the return after a single week off, but it felt like forever because we missed her so much. Certified in paranormal investigation and cryptozoology, lifelong connection to the paranormal. She has a one-woman show coming up that you could watch from all over the globe on the internet beginning on November 13th, which she'll tell you about. She is Anastasia Washington.
It's alive! I mean, I'm here.
How do I do? He said it's all over the internet. Where do I download that? The internet itself.
The internet itself, I don't know. You have to dial up like AOL. You know, you have to go.
Oh, yeah, I know that sound.
How do That's not really the show. Oh, well, you can go to links in my bio to find out where to get the one-woman show link, but or you can go to Whitefire Theater, Black Voices Festival, and click on the link that has my face on it and get tickets there.
I love the Whitefire Theater. I was a member of the Whitefire Theater for quite some time. Great group of people. This is what it's all about. If you have a couple of bucks, support live theater, support independent projects, support a one-woman show. So much work goes into it. So if you're listening to this, you're going to love it. Watch it with us.
Thanks, Gabe.
So, of course, let's get to the beers. We got to go with the Flock. I almost said the Flux Capacitor. We got to go with the Flock Ness Monster. Tell us about it.
Is that a beer, though?
Anastasia and I were both like, wait a minute. No, we want that.
I want to drink that.
There actually is. I drank one on the show. I think it was called the Flux something something Acidor or something. I forget, but I think I have one left in my fridge. So
did you do drugs?
Anyway.
You definitely did drugs.
Costa did drugs.
He did.
I'm just tired.
Oh, tired drug. I've heard that one too.
The beer that I got was from Absolution Brewing, and it's called Flock Ness Monster. It's a double hazy IPA. I typically don't give a damn about doubles anymore because I feel like I'm at a point in my life where I am too old for doubles or triples or anything that's like
sexually, right?
Anything over 10%, yes, also sexual. Anything over 10% and under 5%, I don't fuck with anymore. But this is only 8% and it's really good. So I went grocery shopping, like real grocery shopping. I spent $400 grocery. Okay, but I bought all of the necessities that I have like not had. Dough,
chips.
I bought like
cookie dough, chips, all the necessities.
Ice cream.
You know what? Honestly, I didn't buy a single snack. I bought like real like the spices and seasonings and like
You were
that I've never like actually had in my home because I'm like, oh, I can't afford that. I don't want to do that. I actually bought them this time.
Yeah, you were doomsday prepping. You're ready.
No.
Seasonings. No.
It's no. Not
doomsday prepping.
So my problem was, you know, and this is for all of our guests that are here to listen. I've had depression for a long time. And so I've been living off of, during the pandemic, pretty much frozen foods or pasta. And I haven't been cooking. So I told myself this week, I'm going to buy all this stuff and I'm going to start cooking again, like really cooking again. So I did. I've actually been cooking again. But so I had to buy like real spices. So I bought a ton of Korean and Japanese spices to like really spice up my meal.
Spice up your life, everybody. Spice up. I'm really proud of you as a white person for buying, you know, spices.
Well, that's one of the things that I've always been, and I know it sounds silly, you know, I don't cook as much as I would like, and I want to start cooking more again, but I'm very big on spices. When I was dating an ex of mine recently, we got HelloFresh and we were ordering it a lot, and he didn't own a salt or a pepper shaker. I had to buy that for him.
Oh my God.
So I'm very passionate about spices. So I went a little overboard. I bought maybe 10 different really nice spices from work. And yeah, I'm really excited. And a filet mignon, which I'm going to have tonight.
Whoop. Ooh, she's living it up.
Living it up. The double IPA is good. It's a lot to deal with, only because I'm on my second one.
Well, and you have all 10 spices in the IPA currently. Do you know?
How did you know?
I know you.
I was like, well, I have to make sure I use them correctly. And so I just poured everything at the bottom. And then as I poured the beer in, it was kind of...
Little dash. What about your beer?
Oh, well, I am drinking McLeod Ale Brewing Company's Cutting Bracken Brown Ale. It is 5.3% alcohol by volume. And I'm going to tell you, it's a little bitter. You know, it's a little bit better. Just watch me take a sip.
And the face. Ooh, it's a sour face.
All right. Well, since our fans can't see this on the show, we're going to make this the ad. So great job, Anastasia.
Was that an IPA face?
It was an IPA face, but it's not an IPA.
Yeah.
Take one more sip. I'm not sure that I
understood.
Ooh, she's making a Garbage Pail Kid face. It's rough. What an advertisement. What an ad. So glad they're so pumped they gave you free beer right now.
I'm sure somebody likes it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would think.
Questo, what is in your glass?
I am drinking straight from the can because I don't even know if I have a glass.
Yes,
it is from.
You do? Yeah,
I'm like, I'll be honest with you. I do not have salt or pepper either. I use other spices. I don't really mess with salt and pepper. Okay. I'm wrong. I do have pink Himalayan salt, but I don't have pepper.
Yeah.
I did tell somebody today at my work, they were saying something about being a typical white person. I was like, yeah, but you're not Quasto, where you just load up the avatar and it looks like you.
Yeah. That joke will be on my special. Appreciate you.
You said it on the show.
Oh, I did?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's also a joke that I do on my special.
So. I know. You said it then, too. It was like the first or second episode of the show that you said it.
Spoiler alert. This is from Brickstone Brewery. It's called the Hop Skip. It is a double pale ale, 7.75%. And Brickstone is located in Bourbonnais or Bourbonnais, Illinois. It's an interesting spelling. And I got to tell you, this is a delicious IPA. I enjoy it so much that I know Anastasia would hate it. And it's really cool. There's a bumblebee on it. There's a tank on it for some odd unknown reason.
Wait, what?
There's a hammer on it. All this. And then there's also an explosion.
Whoa.
Sounds like white people designed that.
Yeah, white people definitely designed that. Yeah.
No question. This looks like a spy versus spy comic is what it looks like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which I used to love that comic.
So it's good. Anyways.
Yeah.
Tavour. Follow at Tavour, T-A-V-O-U-R. Use the code HAUNTS10, that's HAUNTS10, and after you hit $20 in your first crate, you will get automatically $10 added to your crate. That is free beer on us. We love Tavor. We are so grateful to have them as our sponsor. We all ordered beer from them anyway, so they joined on the board on the show, and we're very so happy.
We're so happy for it.
If you guys want some beers that you cannot get in your area, this is the way to go. This is such a great idea because you're going to get beers that you might have heard of, possibly, but you can't get in your local area. This is your time to try all of the things that you wanted to try. Please check out Tavor. Please get a beer on us. Like, get the beer on us. It's $10 off of $20 immediately. Let's cheers together.
And it's cheers. Really fun to go on the app because every day they add like another beer or two, and you could just look and see how creative these breweries are from across the country. And it's really fun to just kind of go shopping for beer, and you get it delivered right to your very, very front door. And so we appreciate Tavor. With that said, Ashley, you're going to be not only the co-host, but also the special guest. But let's get to the supernatural scoop, shall we? All right, we got two for you today. The first one, we all looked at this video. This went viral recently from Gettysburg, and as a massive fan of going to Gettysburg as often as I can, I wanted to talk about it on the show. This video is incredibly compelling to me. Basically, it was a gentleman who was driving through Gettysburg at night on a trip. His name is Greg Euling. He's from New Jersey, and it's about a 50-second video that the New York Post basically posted, and it went viral. And it looks as if there are two spirits running right in front of cannons, more or less across the street. You guys watched the video, and then I don't know if you saw the video followed up from a paranormal research group in New Jersey, kind of comparing it to what if it was water streaks on the windshield. What are your thoughts?
I loved it. I think one of the things about videos like that, like any kind of paranormal video, as everybody knows, I am an audio person. I've spent my entire life being all about the audio, and I've never believed in photos for the most part. I've seen very few photos and videos that I'm like, oh, that's definitely a spirit. But watching it, I can't say obviously that it's definitely a spirit, but when I saw it, what I witnessed was similar to experiences that I have had during investigations. It had a very similar flow. The apparition, as it were, looked very similar to what I have caught on raw footage. So it kind of made it more believable for me. And I really hope that this is a real thing. But the fact that it's, you know, Gettysburg, that was a lot. And to see them running the way they did, it just felt, I don't want to say right. That seems like the wrong term to use.
That's so right.
It just felt like natural for the setting that it was in. So I don't know. I really liked the video. I will not say it is or is not paranormal. I'm just going to say that it was a really cool piece of footage that hopefully can be evidence one day and not just a personal experience.
I mean, I think it's hard in cars to get an accurate visual. I think it's a really cool visual. I think Gettysburg is obviously one of the most haunted places in the United States. So it's definitely like compelling and intriguing. I do think it's difficult with all that's going on in your car for me to like 100% go, yeah, that's, you know, but I want to.
I mean, you know what my answer is going to be because I love Gettysburg. I'm a Pennsylvania native. I try to go at least once a year. I've never left Gettysburg without EVPs. I still haven't had a chance to go through my recorder from my trip 2 months ago. But also with all the research that I've done and looking at other people's stories and their experiences, like a lot of things, Gettysburg is even more active at night. The thing is, you're not really allowed to go through the battlefields at night. So I'm not quite sure where this guy was driving. There are a couple public streets that go through Gettysburg that you do see the battlefields on the side. You do see a couple of cannons like that guy had. Technically, you're not allowed to go into where the visitor center is and then drive around. They have like a driving path where you can also get like the audio tour and just play it in your car. It's really amazing. It could be an all day experience for people. It's really great. So with this, I don't know where exactly. I'd love to know what street he was on. That I couldn't find. But Gettysburg is very, very active at night. I mean, that's where a lot of times you hear the horses galloping. It's a lot of times where you hear the screams. I've even heard people hearing the song Taps being played. So, what? Yeah, I mean, so I don't know. I'm sold, but of course, it doesn't take much to sell me. The guys in Gettysburg, there's cannons. And yeah, that paranormal research group did a little experiment with water streaks saying it could have been that. It very well may be water streaks, but that sure looks compelling to me. I mean, just running right out in front of the cannons.
I'm not sure I buy the water streak thing. I think I would more buy like reflections of like technology in your car for like the erratic nature of it. But
right, there's so much to it either way. And that's the thing. Like with visual, again, pareidolia is a real thing. I just saw a picture online that was just like, is this a dog or a clown? And I was like, I see both. What do I do? You know, it's awful. So, you know, video is very difficult for people like me, at least. So that's why I rely specifically on audio. But I still thought, regardless, that it was interesting. And I think that no matter what it comes down to in the paranormal, everything we find is interesting. It doesn't mean it's paranormal. So it's,
you know, it's worth looking into more, right?
Like it's always worth looking into.
That's what I feel about it. And I hope that it's 100% like ghosties walking around, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't
ghost
know.
Boys. Ghost boys.
I mean, people have seen full apparitions of Civil War soldiers. There's no doubt about that. But if you want to see the video, if you haven't seen this video yet, just Google New York Times Gettysburg video. I'm sure it'll pop up. And this second story, I thought was a perfect follow-up to Maria Quijada, who told us last week when she was young, her grandmother essentially would hang out with her all the time, her grandmother who had passed away. So here's a story that I found on Reddit. She said, I've always had a belief in the unknown and the unexplained. To set the scene, I was a military wife at the time living with my best friend and fellow military wife in order to have a friendship and help raising my son while our husbands were away on another tour of duty. My son was learning how to speak and was getting basics down like mama and dada. One day, my friend and I were sitting in the living room drinking coffee and chatting when we hear my son say, grandma, which was odd considering both her mother and mother-in-law lived in different states. Needless to say, we were perplexed by how and where he learned it. I suggested maybe it was from a movie we had watched, but no one really knew. Then it kept happening. He kept saying grandma over and over, especially in the mornings, right when I would get him out of his crib. My son would be chanting about grandma. Fast forward a few weeks later, we're doing a deep clean of the house, dusting around, changing the layout, the whole works. I was helping my friend with her room, and she had a picture of her grandmother on her dresser. I set it on the floor for a moment to dust it. And that's when my son crawled over from his toys, hugged the frame, and very excitedly chanted, grandma. We looked at each other in surprise. It seemed the spirit of her grandmother was visiting my son at night. My son is now 13 with a very scientific mind and attributes this to me over-exaggerating the situation, that there has to be a more logical explanation. But in other words, this kid never met that woman's mother, but hugged it and called it grandma.
Yeah.
Well, we already talked about this. I didn't have that, but Anastasia did.
Okay. It's not a competition, right? I mean, I'm sure I lose on so many other scales. But one thing I have is my grandmother visited me. And she was dead when she visited me.
Right.
So she was dead.
But it was a fun visit, right?
Yeah.
Like, that has to have been a lot for you, though. Like, what was it actually like? Because I could not imagine, because I never actually met my grandparents when they were alive anyway. So I really don't have an idea of what that could have been like for you, because you knew your grandparents, didn't you?
No, I was 2 when she died. Yeah. Okay. So I was really young, and I was really upset at the time. I don't remember the first time she showed up. I was really upset about something. I don't know. I was bullied a lot. So maybe I was crying about something like that. And she just like had a conversation with me. And I remember talking to my mom about it. And she hadn't really disclosed like how sick my grandmother was when I was, you know, before she died and stuff like that. But I was talking about like her wheelchair and her, like all this stuff. And my mom was like, that's really weird. Cause like, I did not disclose how, you know, like this stuff. So, but she was sweet and she calmed me down. Which is probably not like my other grandmother would have, but that's okay. she's a lot calmer than my other grandma.
The other grandma would have came in your sleep just waking you up like, you have school, go now.
Yeah, she'd have been like, you have school and where are those bullies? I'll get them.
And how many times did that actually happen?
So I remember it happening two times when I was a kid. So not that much, but it was.
Okay. And it was always when you were sleeping, I'm assuming?
No, I actually was upset in my room. And then one time at school. It was both times I was upset.
Wait, yeah. It happened at school?
Yeah. Which I thought was, yeah. Because I was really upset at school. I think I was like crying in the bathroom. Par for the course for me.
Oh my God. And what age were you at school when this happened?
I feel like I was like 6 or 7. It was probably when they called me the N-word for the first time or something like that. I was really upset about that. And so I went to the bathroom and like cried. Yeah. My grandmother calmed me down about it.
And this was the grandmother on which side?
That would be my white grandmother.
And so when you were in the bathroom, like where did she just kind of appear? And do you know what she said, or did she say anything at all? Or did she just give you like a calming influence?
Oh no, she was talking to me. She called me her Irish doll because I had red hair and green eyes. And she kept calling me her Irish doll, and she was just calming me down, and she was in her wheelchair. And
wow. Yeah. Okay, that's very vivid.
So, you know, I don't know. Like, it's a weird, like, I believe in it, obviously. And whatever it was, I needed it at the time. So,
right.
I'm good with
I
it.
I love our natural hesitation as people to be like, I don't know.
Well, who and knows? Here's the thing. Like, I know as investigators, when stuff happens to us, here's the thing. As investigators, we're taught to be skeptic, so that we can take it from a scientific point of view. But then stuff happens to us and it is emotional and it is vivid. And yet we're fighting with that feeling like that was very comforting. And that's great that whatever happened to me, that was great. And it's an experience that is special to me. But then again, if somebody was to put me under like a microscope and go, do you think was actually accurate? I might have to be a little bit more skeptical. I don't know. It's weird. I feel like you probably, all of us experience this. Like, it's like a balance that we have to find.
Yeah, and it meant something to you, and it helped. That's the most important thing.
That's all that matters to me. You can pick it apart if you want, anybody. Yeah. But it's okay. I'm fine with it.
Oh, I do it every day of our friendship.
For like just years. Pick that specific thing apart, or just me?
Yeah, everything.
Oh, everything. Oh, thank God. I thought you were just going to do one thing. And I was like, there's so much here.
The main thing that I pick apart about our friendship is your beer choices. But
they're not the same with you. Oh, my God.
Friendship.
Costa's like, I don't know what to do with these two.
He says that.
While we were talking about picking things apart, this past week was the 8th anniversary of the debut of Ghost Hunters with Ashley Trobe. So we thought, this is a perfect episode for it. Let's just talk to Ashley about some experiences, some memories, some stories. I'm interested in the process of how you got on the show, and then let's talk about maybe some things you remember from investigations.
All right, let's do it. Ask me the questions, and I will give you every answer.
Okay. Well, we know that from the time you were 13, you said, I want to be on a ghost hunting show. That's going to happen.
Right.
Going to be on Ghost Hunters. Okay. Maybe not 13. I don't know what age it was. It was young. How did the process occur to where you got chosen to be on the show?
I'm glad you asked. I really did say that. I told my mom I was dead set. I was going to be on Ghost Hunters specifically. Her and I would watch that show together a lot. I had, you know, like when you're a kid and as an adult, you have these dreams and you play them out to yourself while you're laying in bed. And you're like, this is what's going to happen. This is my fantasy. This is what's going to go on. And my dream was Ghost Hunters. I wanted to do that so badly. And I respected them so much because there are episodes that are boring. And I thought that was really fascinating because there's so many ghost shows that have to have something fascinating happening all the time. And this one didn't. And that in my mind was just like, okay, they're literally looking out for the truth. So I told everyone I knew I was going to be on that show one day. And so I am in my very, very young 20s and I'm working at Starbucks when I am contacted by somebody and they're like, hey, Grant is leaving Ghost Hunters and he's being replaced by this other person, but that other person needs a replacement and you should apply. And I was like, how does that even work? Like, what do you mean? But I knew several of the cast at that point already. I was just friends with them through like other minor investigations, you know, in the first place. So I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do it. Like, why not? I was super hot back then and I had a lot more confidence than I do now in my 30s.
She's hot now.
Yeah.
I had a lot more confidence back then. But yeah, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to do this. This is the dream that I've literally told my entire family that I was going to do one day. Like, the worst that'll happen is they won't pick me. So I applied. I applied through this website, through Pilgrim specifically, who were the showrunners of that network. Mm-hmm. And I got a call back almost within a day. I got a call back pretty much immediately. And I had to go through like some pretty heavy psych evaluations and background checks and internet checks, by the way. I just want you to know, I had to completely erase the history of me existing on MySpace and LiveJournal and Greatest Journal to be able to do this, because they found like I would post poetry or like lyrics from a song and they'd be like, oh, well, this mentioned suicide. Are you suicidal? And I'm like, no, that was a lyric to a song I really like. They're like, so you're suicidal. I'm like, wait, no, I'm really not. I really like this song. So for those of you that don't know, I love music. Music is my life. Almost every tattoo on my body is music related. That's just the thing that I'm into. And so I posted about lyrics a lot. And to this day, now that I'm in my 30s, I don't post lyrics anymore, because in my head, I'm like, what if people think that I'm trying to say I'm trying to kill myself? That wasn't like my intent. I wanted people to just enjoy things the way that I enjoyed them. But yeah, that was one of the things. Like, I had to delete that part of me off of the internet because it looked bad. And I get that. I understand why the network thought that was bad, because I got to say, after I got on the show, the things that fans or anti-fans, fans of the show and not fans of you, like whatever it is, they will find anything they can to tear you apart. And so that was big part of my early 20s, was being torn apart on the internet and me having to find a way to build up from that.
I would imagine this wasn't just ghost hunting trolling, that we're talking about just human beings trolling human beings, being whether it be chauvinistic or
a lot of chauvinistic. The number one comment I got was very transphobic. But it was a lot of people saying that I looked like a trans person, which that's not a problem. But the way that they tried to use it, they tried to make it seem like it was a problem. And they did that for a long time. And so luckily for me, like, I have so many people in my life that I love so much that are in that trans community. So I understood the base of that. So I was lucky, but there was a lot of people in the world that would not have understood that and been like, oh, you're calling me this. You're calling me something that everybody else thinks is negative. I am a huge trans advocate. And the fact that they tried to use that as an insult to me was really fucking difficult, because being on the network, I wasn't allowed to like reply in such a negative way, like, hey, fuck you. Hey, you can't say that kind of way. I had to be positive and upbeat, lifted. And it's not that the network was censoring me. They weren't, you know, Pilgrim was great. They were super fun to work with, but there's only so much they can do, because at some point, if they're hiring me and I say something really fucking stupid, they're liable. What it comes down to in the end is anybody that said that I look like a drag queen or look like a drag king or whatever they thought, thank you, because drag kings are amazing.
They have great makeup.
I've ever met are amazing. So thank you for saying those things, because what it comes down to in the end is they thought they were insulting me, but all they did was uplift me, because I love all of those people and I love them so much. And I'm so glad to have all those people in my life. And it was just, it's funny that people try to take like silly things. And I feel like the ghost hunting community has done that quite a bit. I have been called, I don't know if this is going to get censored, Quasto, but I have been called faggot by quite a few investigative teams in the field over the years. So, you know, it's a very interesting world to live in where you're having to defend your sexual identity, your gender identity, your identity in general to these people. Yeah. And then you have to go on TV and then you have to do it again to a ton of strangers.
And also to ghosts itself, because you've had quite a few ghosts actually do similar trolling type things.
Well, you know, calling me a whore, that's not the worst thing that's happened. So,
by a ghost or by?
Luckily by a ghost.
That is the worst thing.
Being called a whore by a ghost. I mean, if I sleep around, I sleep around. What are they going to do?
The ghosts just want to join. I mean, they just want to have fun.
They're probably going to watch.
That's true. Oh, that makes it worse. Oh, that might be it. Maybe that's why they all know.
Well, what was the experience like as a whole? I mean, are there one or two experiences that really stand out? Because we know you were investigating for years prior to the show. So you came in essentially prepared. Obviously, you weren't as experienced as everyone else on the team. But what really stands out from that season?
We only had one really big thing happen in this episode, but it was my debut episode. It was Don't Feed the Apparitions, and it was my first episode in season 8, and it was based in Alexandria, Louisiana. It was kind of like a whole difficult thing for me, one, because I knew some of the cast, and I didn't know the other half of the cast, but I had to pretend like I didn't know anybody, which... that's a very hard thing to do when you have history with people, is to act like you don't know who these people are. And then I also realized that, like, I know a lot about paranormal investigating, but probably not as much as these people. And that was the first time in my life that I felt like, oh, I don't know as much as the person I'm investigating with. Usually I did. And that was really a weird thing for me. We had some cool stuff happen, but for the most part, it was just... and I can say this genuinely, it was one of the happiest like memories and moments of my life. All of the things I dreamed of my whole life, all of the investigations that I had done, everything that I had geared myself to doing with the paranormal field, I was actually doing for the first time in real time with the people I really wanted to do this with. And unbeknownst to them, were being forced to do it with me. And it was really cool. It was a really genuinely fun experience. And the best part is, in addition to all the paranormal, it was in a zoo. So I got to see animals the whole time, which is so cool.
Whoa.
I know.
Did you see any ghost animals?
No. Oh, I wish it had been. It was not ghost animals. That would have been so cool, but also really sad because I don't want ghost animals to get stuck in like this world.
That's sad too, yeah.
No, we saw, I believe it was a male apparition, if I remember correctly. But yeah, the whole thing was done in a zoo. I got to meet a crocodile and monkeys and other cool things. So great first episode because I love animals.
Okay, so that was your first episode. What stands out the most from the season? Is there anything that you recall?
One of the most interesting cases that I did with Ghost Hunters was Hammond Castle. And I don't know if you guys have heard of Hammond Castle. That place is wild. It's in Massachusetts, and it's the laboratory / home of John Hammond. Right. So he was an inventor. He was a scientist. He was a pioneer of everything. He was brilliant, and he built this castle for his wife and for his wife and him, but it was meant to be their home, but it was also meant to be his like laboratory kind of situation. So he had like a Faraday cage in his home. He had all this crazy cool stuff, and I got to go investigate it. And I know it sounds really stupid, but my first memory is, oh, I had really terrible scallops there. And then my second memory is Josh Gates and I got to investigate together for the first time. So Josh Gates and I got to like go through this castle of this well-known scientist. it was a lot. There was a point where we were investigating. Josh was like, hey, look up. What is that? And we both look up. And the chandelier that is, there's no one in the building with us, right? That was a big thing with the show, was like, sure, it was very secluded sets. And we look up and the chandelier is like wildly swinging back and forth, not gently, like it could be hitting the fucking ceiling. It was swinging back so hard. And it was like, what? God, what are we looking at right now? And I still to this day have no idea what had happened. It was really cool.
Was it making noise? Because chandeliers tend to have
a lot
of glass and things like that. Yeah.
Yo, probably. When you're in that zone, here's the problem. When you're in that zone and you're in that moment, like you're seeing or feeling or hearing or doing one thing at a time. And that's one of the weird things about it. It was a lot. And that's probably one of the reasons I wound up not being on the show later, is because I went to go record it, but I was so confused in the moment that I had the camera facing this way and the chandelier was like right here. And I was just like, what's going on with that? And so I just, you know, didn't have it pointed quite in the right direction. You know, if you look them up, it says his castle was investigated by TAPS in 2012. I was in that episode. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Wikipedia.
And thank you, Hammond Castle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So John Hammond Jr., again, he was an inventor and a scientist, and he loved the paranormal, by the way. Like, that was something he and his wife were super interested in. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal to them. They had a Faraday cage in their house, and he was friends with Nikola Tesla, which I really feel like everybody needs to know, because unfortunately for Hammond, Nikola Tesla took the ideas from him constantly. And so everything that Nikola Tesla says he came up with.
Yeah. Okay. That's because I knew Tesla got stolen from. So Hammond is the dude who stole from Tesla.
No. Tesla stole from Hammond.
I could have swore I watched a documentary on Tesla that basically described him dying more or less broke and crazy because there was one guy who consistently stole his ideas, and because Tesla never really cared about copywriting thing.
Because from what I remember, it was that Tesla was stealing from Hammond, and that's why Tesla became more popular in the end.
It was Thomas Edison who stole from Nikola Tesla. So Tesla stole from Hammond. It was just some really weird steel train from people. But yeah, Edison took a lot of credit
for being the biggest thief of them all. So there Edison, what it wound up being is Edison's kind of a piece of shit compared to everybody else. Not to say that Tesla wasn't or Hammond wasn't, but the fact that Edison thrived off of everything that these two guys did. And not just these two guys, like Hammond's wife, like she was also into the paranormal the way that he was. So like she did all of this stuff with him, like maybe not as fervently, like maybe not as excitedly in the end, but like she lived in a castle with a Faraday cage and like paranormal experiments in this castle. And she was like, all right, well, this is love. So that's kind of what it comes down to in the end, is Hammond somehow, he didn't get erased from history, but you have to be a history buff to know about Hammond, if that makes sense. Like, he somehow just wound up not being that face of science because he was into pseudoscience so much. He loved the paranormal, and that's kind of what happens to you know, people like the three of us, for example. We like science, but we also like pseudoscience. Sure, we might wind up in history books one day, but will somebody that happens to be slightly above us, you know, like Nikola Tesla, be more well known?
That could explain why the Hammond Castle is so haunted, because if he and his wife were so into the paranormal, Lord knows how many seances they may have had, or how many gatherings they may have had, how many spirits they invited in the castle. So who knows how many spirits are hanging out there because of Hammond and his wife. So that's a very intriguing element right there. The fact that they love the paranormal, you have to believe they're probably still there. At least their energy is still has to be there somewhere.
If theirs isn't, someone has to be, because there was definitely a lot happening there during the investigation. I don't want to say I hope it's them. I think that's one of the hardest parts about paranormal investigating is like, you hope you're going to meet this person. You hope you're going to meet this spirit. But then you kind of realize like that might be a spirit of somebody who got lost and that can't move on. And that's really hard. And that can be a lot. So I hope that whoever I saw or spoke to or met wasn't necessarily John Hammond or his wife. But I'm really glad to have had the experience. And I think that that location is beautiful and amazing. And the scallops are terrible. And, you know,
if you guys don't have the scallops. They're haunted.
And they're stale.
They're very chewy. That's the problem. They're so chewy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I know you've mentioned in the past, you know, filming a paranormal show's not easy because it's a lot more involved than just going on your regular paranormal investigation. But is there one thing that really stands out that you miss from filming the show?
I'm one of those people. Amy Bruni, she was on the show as well with me. She recently said, she was like, oh, airports are my home. Like airports are the things that I love. And so seeing them empty is heartbreaking. And I agree. I love going to airports. And I know that's like a really weird thing because most people don't. I loved that part of the travel though. I thought that was just a weird, fun, like seeing where people were coming from and going to. I just fucking loved it. But I gotta say it, like not just the cast, but everybody in production, like the whole production part of those shows is so fun. And people forget that we're spending like weeks on the road. Like every episode was a minimum of 7 days, you know, between being on the road and then filming and then being on the road again. And we were only allowed to travel for like 8 hours a day. So imagine driving 8 hours a day on the East Coast and then having to stop and wait and then drive 8 hours again and then stop and wait. Like it's a whole thing. A fun episode we were at the, I think it was Western Kentucky University. And in Western Kentucky University, we went to go look at this really fun, gorgeous theater that they had. And I saw a spider and I was like, that looks like a brown recluse. That sure would suck. And then I got bit by a brown recluse.
On the investigation?
Yeah. Yeah, it sucked. And luckily it didn't happen during filming. It happened right after we finished filming. And I was like, that's a brown recluse right there. Bite. I was like, oh no.
And then it just jumped at you. You're like, oh God, I shouldn't have called it out.
Well, that's the weird thing. It didn't jump at me at all. I remember where I was. I remember the feeling. I remember the moment it happened because it felt like somebody took like a hot metal rod that had been sitting in the fire and just like stabbed me really quickly with it. And it hurt. Oh man, it hurt. But I remember thinking like, oh, this is the worst place to get a spider bite because all I could think about was my uncle when I was a kid got a brown recluse spider bite and it like ate away at most of his leg. And I was like, ew, this is gross. And I told all of my castmates, I was like, that would be the worst thing that could ever happen to me. And then got hit by one.
Well, that's a good memory.
Super.
Is it though?
It is. Well, no, it isn't though, because I lived. It hit my elbow.
The boy who lived. Oh, no. I can't say that.
Oh, no. I can't say that anymore. I am the person that lived. But yeah, it was a kind of a wild ride. And I know you guys all checked in for paranormal experiences, but I feel like the weird backside of filming is a lot more fun than the paranormal.
Well, and spider bites are very scary. So
fun fact about that place, though. So I use this in examples a lot. Western Kentucky University. Mm-hmm. They had a room where they were doing theater. And in this theater, people were complaining when they would be in the green room or like, you know, the dressing room. Oh, I have a headache. Oh, I feel like somebody's watching me. I have nausea. I don't feel good. And so that was the room that they were like, you need to go investigate this room. It's really important because the main stars of our show feel uncomfortable and you need to do something about this. And we show up and we're like, yeah, it's going to be so crazy and haunted and fun. And we get in there and we use our typical technology and we measure the EMF. And it turns out the whole time it was the electromagnetic field was so high from the exposed wiring in the room that people were suffering paranoia. They were suffering headaches. They were suffering nausea, which not part of the paranormal side. Scientifically, that is proven that the EMF field will cause those things. And so all of these things that people thought were paranormal were 100% backed by science. And 100%, it was just because the exposed wiring that this, you know, college had not covered in this one small green room. And it was so weird because we had heard so many stories and so many like crazy things that we're like, yeah, this is going to be so cool. And then we go in and we're like, oh no, it's off the charts EMF and it's really dangerous. And like, people shouldn't be in here safely because this is really bad.
Oh, no.
And it turns out that part wasn't paranormal. To say the rest of the place wasn't paranormal, couldn't say. I can tell you for sure that room specifically, it was not paranormal. It was 100% electromagnetic field.
Well, Ashley, thank you so much for sharing your stories. I know as time goes on with the podcast, the more that'll probably pop into your brain, and feel free to share them at any time. What a show. This was a lot of fun. Once again, at Tavor, follow them, use the code HAUNTS10. And Ashley, you want to say something before we plug your stuff, right?
Yes, I do. First off, I'm so lucky to have you guys as my co-hosts. Anastasia, Kwasi, you guys are so amazing. I love you both so much in every single way. I feel like we really need to, this guy does not let himself get shout out enough. So I just feel like we really need to plug Kwasi for a second.
Yeah,
this guy is working like 10 to 12 hour shifts at the hospitals every day before coming back and doing the show with us. He's fucking killing it. So, Kwasto, thank you. Because I'm lazy and I'm tired and I'm exhausted. I would have given up so long ago. And it's only because of you and Anastasia that I am pushing along and doing this. So thank you guys. You guys are both so amazing and so I'm so grateful for you both.
Well, we're grateful for you, and I'm grateful for Kwasto. Yeah, you're killing it with work and stand up. Guys, check his stand up out. Come on.
Eventually, the world will be. I don't have an announcement yet, but we're getting there. But no, I appreciate there. It. I love doing the show. I love the paranormal. We all do. And so the fact that we get to talk about it on a weekly basis, we're very lucky to be doing that. So with that said, we're at Haunts and Hops on your social media platforms. If you're listening, if you're enjoying this, tell a couple of friends. We are trying to spread the good word. We feel like we're a very different kind of paranormal podcast. So we want to keep growing. Anastasia, tell people about you.
Oh, well, you can find me at Anastasia W on Twitter, at Anastasia Wash on Instagram, Anastasia TV on YouTube, where I'm putting like weird stand-up and quirky like sketches and stuff if you want to laugh. And my one-woman show, you can find it, 50 Shades of Mix, at the Whitefire Theater, virtually throughout the world. Links in my bio. Thanks, you guys.
Ashley,
how do I follow that? My sweater says rash right now on
it does
video. Mm-hmm.
Ashley Trobe rash.
Yeah, it's Ashley Trobe across the board. Everything is boring, but I have beer, so no, things are good, things are fun. We have the show going on. We will have our Patreon up soon. We've been working on it. It is taking a little bit more time than I thought because it turns out social media is a full-time job. So, you know, we're going to work on that a little bit more. We're going to get it up and running. And you guys can watch us react to the things that we are saying, which I got to say, considering that three people on this show happen to also be actors, there's a lot of emotional response to everything that happens. So cheers to that.
I feel like Ashley Rash would be like your roller derby name back in the 80s.
Ash Rash.
Yeah.
It's like my Rugrats name.
And once again, we're at Haunts and Hops. I'm at Jay Kwasto on all social media platforms. And it's now time for all of us to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Sorry, I got it drunk. Bye.
Okay, bye. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, tell a couple of friends and please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're listening on, especially if it's iTunes and Apple Podcasts. We appreciate you.